Watch this. No way!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast. I am Tom Mills and today I'm joined by Sam Williams.
Greetings, Thomas. Pleasure as always.
And we have a special guest on, the club archivist, or one of the club archivists from Royal County Down Golf Club in Northern Ireland, Brian Fleming. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Good evening. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Tom and Sam. Thank you.
So it must be a true honour to be enrolled in this position at County Down, Brian. Being just a member is, I imagine, a fascinating thing, but to be able to dive into the history of it must be really interesting for you. I mean, how did you get involved in the history of Royal County Down? And what got you interested in the history in the first place?
Yes, good question. I mean, I think I just gradually stumbled into it and I suppose there are very few members that are really, involved in delving into the past in any great depth, as long as there's somebody's done a centenary book and updated it. But because I had that interest, and one of my colleagues, the other archivist, Alan Hewitt, he volunteered to update the centenary book in 2000. And it had been written in 1989, and then in 2014, Alan updated that. So I kind of was brought into things at that stage because I'd had such an interest in the history of golf in general, and specifically golf on the island of Ireland. And that brings you to places like Royal County Down and Royal Port Rush, where I was a member when I was younger, in my teens and 20s. So that was the history of my getting involved, and it's been a labour of love. I find it fascinating.
It does make you wonder, doesn't it? I think that when you look at, you know, there's probably a glut of people that did centenary books in the late 80s and early 90s with a lot of golf clubs, and I suspect to an extent, certainly we see a lot of, you know, people hold those positions for a while, and very often there's very few people to step in and do that. And if you don't maintain it, then very quickly, I guess it kind of evaporates. How long have you played your golf at County Down for, Brian?
I joined Royal County Down, or was invited to join, I should say. You just don't roll up and apply. I got invited in the early 80s. So I was a junior doctor at the time, and was lucky that I'd known quite a few of the members there, because there had been an annual match where Royal County Down played against the University Golf Club, and so I knew people there. And then the other junior doctor that I met and married, her father happened to be a member. so that was lucky. I got invited by the then honorary treasurer of the club, who had been a very close friend of my father, who kind of got us all into golf when we were kids. Yeah, so that was that was how I got started there, and lucky. So nearly 40 years, yeah.
Wow. And when you were digging, when you were updating the centenary book and you were digging into the history of it, did you find anything that you weren't expecting in there? Was there any sort of groundbreaking things you thought, nobody knew that happened, and we've just kind of uncovered it on the own way?
There's a few little things, yes, but I think for me the most important thing about any course, I guess, is the or any club, is the course itself. So having sort of been very interested in I suppose the evolution of golf courses in general and golf course architecture, you sort of get curious and you see these old photographs. I mean, they're sort of almost hundreds of old photographs of the course. So I got curious about that. And we've been lucky that we have so many old photographs. And then you've probably heard of Richard Latham, who started to write on the evolution, of course, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's a Woodall Spa guy, and he, after he did Woodall Spa, came to Royal County Down, and he unearthed stuff that I was then able to utilize in terms of the evolution of the course. And it was amazing just how that course has evolved into the amazing place that it is today. So that, and then of course you can't ignore the membership itself, because it and how the club itself got set up, which was there was a big connection with the railway that came, the railway line came down from Belfast. And if it hadn't been for the railway, you know, it's debatable whether the golf course would have got up and running in the way that it did. And then you've got characters within the club over the years who were stalwarts. And you, when you read their history, I mean, they're all pretty amazing people, and people of great vision and foresight, considering what they did back at the end of the 19th century and early 20th century. So yeah, it's when you put all those things together, there's a lot to look at.
And I think when you I mean, the course is probably the best jumping off point for us here in this discussion, but when you, as an outsider looking in, when you look at Royal County Down, you look at it and just say, well, one, what incredible land, and, you know, almost certainly the greatest views you will ever see on a golf course. But the actual routing of the course itself, am I right in thinking there was kind of a rudimentary 9 holes first established, and then quite quickly Old Tom was kind of, you know, appointed to then expand that to 18? How's the course kind of evolved through that and with Old Tom? Because other people have had a hand in it, right? But not necessarily, but the design is largely attributed to Old Tom. Is that correct?
Well, it is attributed to it in every website or book. You see Tom Morris's name there, and indeed it is true. When they set when these prominent businessmen and professionals who were really from Belfast, they weren't really local people in Newcastle. They were encouraged by the railway line to think about building a golf course there because the land lent itself to it. And they went ahead and did that. And pretty much the first thing they did was they kind of set out a little 9-hole course. But they only played it for a few months. Tom Morris came over 3 or 4 months after the first meeting. And he looked at the 9 holes that they had laid out at that point and said, well, I actually can't really improve on that. But what he did, he said, look, you've done very well, maybe a couple of minor adjustments there, but if you want to turn this into 18 holes, this is what I recommend. And so over the next few months, they more or less made another 9 holes that Tom Morris had designed for them. And we have an old original map of what he did. And the evolution of the course was broadly, there were two phases after that, because for those first 10 or 11 years, things didn't change very much, even though there were great championships came to Royal County. Well, it was County Down at that time, didn't become Royal County Down until 1908. But those first number of years, the Irish Amateur Open came there in 1893 and was won by the famous John Ball, who had already won the Open Championship as an amateur. And Harold Hilton then won that same championship a few years later. So it was attracting these great amateurs. And then Harry Vardon won what was an Irish professional tournament that ran for a few years in the 1890s. He beat J.H. Taylor in the final of it. It was apparently an amazing match. And we have the detailed handwritten records of that match, 36-hole final. So it was a great course at that time, but it went through two phases after that. One was a member, a man called George Coombe, who really, he took the view that it was a course full of blind holes. I mean, I know there are a few blind holes still, but it was full of blind holes, and that seems to be in the way they played golf in those days. It was almost an element of chance in the way they played over these sand dunes. But George Coombe worked out that you could play down the valleys in between these massive sand dunes and have a, perhaps a more enjoyable experience and every bit as challenging. So for the first decade of the 20th century, he tried to do that. And in fact, the second nine that holds is pretty much the same as George Coombe laid out in those days, but he really struggled with the front nine where the dunes are absolutely massive. And so after the First World War, again, there was quite a bit of vision from the council members. They'd heard of Harry Colt, and they said, look, let's bring this fellow over and see what he can do for us. And Harry Colt pretty much redesigned not all of the holes, but most of the holes on the front nine. And really, that was 1926. Harry Colt came, made those changes, and the course pretty much hasn't changed since the late 20s, with the exception of a little bit of a rerouting about 14 or 15 years ago by Martin Hebert, who I'm sure you know well. And Martin redesigned the 16th or rerouted it a bit. Otherwise, that's been it. That initial 10 or 11 years, then this man Coombe, who I think was an amazing man actually, and did a lot more than redesign Royal County Down. He was a founder member of the Golfing Union of Ireland and introduced the first handicapping system upon which the current handicapping system, even to this day, is still based.
Really?
Yeah, he was an amazing.
That's fascinating, you see, because you just don't get that, you know, when you sort of do a very bit of light research before you go and visit somewhere, you just don't see that stuff, and yet. That, you know, clearly a fascinating guy in his own right, and his contribution to the club, which, you know, history just has a funny way of putting the bigger name in over time, doesn't it? And gradually the figures almost sort of drift into the background maybe a little bit.
So, Coombe was fantastic. And we discovered, you were talking about how do you find these things. We discovered in the clubhouse was reconfigured and a bit of it was rebuilt in the mid-2000s, just before the Walker Cup came there. And I knew there was a map of Coombe's changes to the course, but it just had disappeared. And lo and behold, I got up into the eaves of the clubhouse and there it was, sitting rolled up. And it's a massive big map. It's about 4 feet by 3 feet.
Wow.
We got it cleaned up and it's now mounted in the wall of the men's locker room. And it was, I mean, it was such a professional job that it was printed in London by Hansard, who are the same company that do the records of the House of Commons proceedings and so on. The beautiful map. And we're very lucky to have that record of what Coombe did at that time. And indeed, Harry Colt used that map when he then did his changes in the mid-1920s. He kind of superimposed, and you can see his line drawings superimposed on that map. And he did it with pencil, but we're not there going to rub out Harry Colt's line drawings. Yeah, so there you go. I mean, it's a piece of luck finding it. And as I say, it was professionally cleaned up. And it's a fantastic piece of memorabilia.
I mean, it's strange. You get these people back in the early days of golf where they could sort of turn their hand to anything. You know, he said he got involved in the original handicapping structure and then he designs one of the greatest golf courses on the planet. And then and all this just being a member. It's just you don't seem to get that anymore, the way that they can just turn their hand to anything. And also it's funny how something can just end up, like you say, in the eaves of a golf club, that someone at some point has been, oh, well, that map's quite good. Let's just chuck it up there and hopefully we'll not forget about it. and then it's only when you're kind of taking the golf course, the golf club apart, that you happen to stumble across it. It's just brilliant.
I'm just thinking about some of the other bits of the history. You touched on it there, I think, Brian, in terms of, you know, the club's origination, like many, I suppose, of that era, starting with, you know, the railway company who established a route and then local businessmen, then, you know, travel to the seaside and play golf. And that's a very familiar story. Am I right in thinking, you know, one of the most famous parts of Raw County Down is, of course, the hat. And am I right in thinking there's a story within there about train travel from Belfast to Newcastle and what that was used for?
Yes. The Raw County Down, in a sense, the core essence of the club is that you don't come down to play with your regular four ball week in, week out. The club is based on the two main members' days. Members can play any day, but the day that the members really gather in some numbers are Wednesdays and Saturdays. And back in the day when the only means of transport really was the train, the railway came to Newcastle in the middle of the 19th century. So it was already there, and they travelled up and down from Belfast, and it wasn't a long journey. It took less than an hour, just came straight down through the countryside and farmland and hills of County Down. But they met up at Queen Street Station, which is no longer there, but it was in the centre of Belfast, and they put the names into a hat whilst they were on the train, and they had their lunch and drink on the train, which at the very start, the course actually started right at the railway station. So it started there with the first tee, and the 18th tee was beside that. So, but they drew the names out of a hat at that time. And then as time went by, that became the way that the club set up its golf amongst the members and continues to this day. There's no train, and it stopped in 1950. But what happens is that you get up on Saturday morning, you phone your name in, and there is a member called the Hat Man who has a good knowledge of all the members and what their playing abilities are and personalities and so on. And he makes up the game so that by the time you arrive at the club for a drink and some lunch, you can see on the notice board, the little notice board in the bar, and he has made up the games, so you know exactly who you're playing with. And so you go into lunch and have lunch with your four, and for 6 months of the year your four is a foursome, and in summer months your four is a four ball, and that has never changed, and you will always be meeting new members. It means any new members who come in to the club get very quickly to know other members, and they're made to feel comfortable and part of the whole club life from day one. It doesn't mean you can't arrange a four if you really want to and go and play with them, but that tends not to happen very much. So that the hat is the backbone of the club, and long may it continue, I guess, because I remember you can bring guests to the club and bring them into the hat, and they just think it's a great way to meet more people and not be stuck in the same four ball week in, week out, month in, month out, and so on forever. So it's pretty.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a refreshing way to play and meet people and. That's it. I can't see.
No,
that.
I think it's an interesting point you raise there, Brian, because it's kind of like an old quirky tradition in some respects when you look at it now, that by holding on to that, it's actually created something that I think is brilliant, because, you know, a lot of the time in these podcasts, we'll reference our own club, Blackwell in England. And, you know, there we typically have a similar culture where it's like not about fixing in advance, because golf's great when you play with different people. And actually, that's then created this brilliant atmosphere where people are playing regularly with lots of different people. And I think there's nothing more repetitive than playing with the same weekly four ball every Saturday. And I think, you know, I think there's probably a broader point in there, but, you know, I certainly feel like a lot of golfers and golf clubs would do well to try and do something like that. You know, the general roll up mentality that's quite popular. Those are some of the best days when you just don't know who you're going to get drawn with. So, it's incredible, isn't it, how you kind of kept that tradition, you know, for so long now.
Yeah. The train itself must have been fun. I think those guys knew how to enjoy themselves in those days.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
And the railway company, donated a carriage for the golf club's exclusive use, I think the Rally company made a bit of money out of the golf course, and probably vice versa in those early years. But there are some old photographs of these guys standing on the platform, and the railway carriage there, with photographs of the outside and inside. In fact, it was donated to the golfers in the early 1920s. It had been the royal carriage for two royal visits to Northern Ireland by, I think it was George V, did both of them, and Queen Mary. I'm sure somebody will correct me on my history, and then in the 1920s, they felt that carriage had outlived its usefulness. And so it was given over to the golfers, and it was extremely well appointed, as you can imagine, having been specifically built for royalty. And we think that those guys knew how to enjoy themselves sitting in the lap of luxury, having their refreshments. When the railway company, we discovered recently, again part of our digging, when the railway line closed down in 1950, all these things were sold off, and it actually ended up with a farmer tucked into the corner of a field. It was a chicken coop, and it was discovered by a local railway preservation society in Downpatrick, who are great enthusiasts, and they actually rescued it from the chicken coop from the field. And it's now in their museum undergoing restoration, and you can see some of the old the woodwork, the windows, some of the stained glass windows are still actually in the carriage, but it might be some years before it gets fully back to its pre-1950 condition. But there you go. So more memorabilia, but it doesn't belong to us.
Yeah, chickens can do some damage, for sure.
We have photographs of what the chickens did to it. You don't want to know about that.
How long would that journey have taken them from Belfast to Newcastle back in those days?
It
would have
taken quite an hour, and it only made about a couple of stops. I don't know what speed it went at. As the crow flies, it's probably wouldn't be any more than 30 miles. And there are a couple of old stops. There are old Victorian station houses on route that are still standing. But it would have been an hour, so they would have had plenty of time to enjoy themselves. I think there was, after 1950, there was a bus ran for a while, but it wasn't anywhere near as successful. So people travel by car, and very often members will be lived close to each other in Belfast and will share the car. And I should say, in fairness, there are a lot more local members from the Newcastle area have now joined the club, and they're very much at the heart and soul of the club as well. So it's reached out into the local community. And there was the landowner of the family who donated the land, and or at least leased it for very little money, the Ansley family, helped the club set up a local club for the local men. And when you visited there, you might have seen in the trees behind the first tee the Mourne Golf Club, named after the mountains and the area. And that's a thriving club, which has quite significant playing rights on the course, and we have a very good relationship with them, including an annual match. So those things are all important parts of the club. We're very proud of our connections with the local community in Newcastle. And there's also a ladies club there, which has been a very thriving club since 1894. So they set up on their own, and that's been going strong ever since. Yeah, so it's quite a nice little community.
It was an outstanding segue of yours, Brian. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but one of the things I had written down here was the Ansley course. And you obviously touched on the family name there. So am I right in thinking it was named in honour of them, or have I got that totally wide of the mark?
Oh, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. It used to be known just as the number two course, championship course, and then the number two course. And it's a short course. It's about 4,500 yards long, but I can tell you, and if you come back, you really must play it. It's a joyous place to play golf. It's a fabulous golf course. with incredible challenges. You don't really need your driver, perhaps with a couple of holes, the driver's okay, but you have to position full of dog legs and tiny greens and just and spectacular views as well. And Martin Ebert, who we talked about earlier, redesigned, added three new holes out by the beach on the north end of the property, and that has enhanced it. And it's just a superb place to play golf, and it's great for kids. And the ladies actually use it a lot. Not that they don't play the championship course, but the championship course is a massive course, and they're, obviously the ladies' tees makes it playable for them. But they actually choose to play a lot of their competitions on the Ansley links. We're just lucky to have it. Not many courses have a second course that they can fall back on, and members play it quite a bit themselves. So yeah, beautiful. Named after the Ansley family. The leasehold was donated. I think it was a 10,000 year lease, and they pretty much tore it up and gave us the freehold about 15 or 20 years ago.
Oh, nice. Some of the new holes you can see, am I right in thinking from the back of the fourth tee of the championship, you can kind of overlook
that? Those are the new holes that Martin Ebert designed for us, yes. Those three new holes go round that massive dune that you can see behind the fourth tee on the championship course and play along the beach. And as I say, it's just a joyous place to play golf.
And when was the Ansley links first laid out then? Did that come shortly after sort of Harry Colt visited, or was it prior to that?
Well, the Ansley links were there. That would have been George Coombe incorporated those into his redesign, because he went further out into the dune land further north, and this left it's a somewhat flatter course, although it's by no means flat, but it lent itself to another 18 holes. And in actual fact, that old map that I was telling you about that we discovered, it's actually on that map of 1908, and it's just called on it the Ladies' Course, because they tended to play a lot more there. So, yeah. But a beautiful place to play golf, I can tell you. Yeah,
it's funny because when we visited, I didn't know much about the Ansley course at all, if I'm being really honest with you, Brian. And the guys we were with just sort of pointed out, said, you know, these are some of the new holes, and talked about it, you know, 4,500 yards. And you know what I think is brilliant? And I think, I'm guessing you'll have played Formby in your time, but having a course like Formby Ladies that you know, which is almost like a different challenge, isn't it? You can take a half set. It's all about precision. And, you know, for all the greatness that the championship course brings, it's a hell of a test. And whilst the Ansley, I'm sure, is tricky, it's tricky in a slightly different way without being as taxing perhaps on you. So, I certainly felt like coming away from our visit there, I'd really like to see the Ansley. And I suspect a lot of visitors who are probably listening to this podcast on their way over to Ireland at the time, and, you know, probably going to Raw County Down and listening to this podcast to hear about it, I suspect there's some words of advice in there to play it if you get the chance, right?
Oh, I would highly recommend it. It is so much fun and has its own challenges. So Formby is not a bad comparison, actually. You're right, I've been there, and it's although I haven't actually played Formby, the ladies seem to dominate it. didn't let us near it when we were there. Quite right too.
So for any visitor, Brian, that was to come over and try and tackle the championship course at Royal County Down, I mean, you've been there for a good number of years now. I mean, what advice would you give to people in terms of playing the course and expectations going around there? Because I played there knowing that it was rated as one of the best golf courses in the world, and I still couldn't catch my breath at how beautiful it was to stand there and play it. What advice would you give to a visitor coming in to Royal County Down?
Okay, well, if you book your tee time, I would offer two pieces of advice. The first one I would say is if you can afford it, and the caddy scheme is one of the few left on the island of Ireland, I would book a caddy. The second thing I would do is I would have a think about my playing ability, and that's broadly speaking, you know, where you fall on the handicapping system. Because leave aside the Amsey links, as far as the championship course is concerned, this is a personal view, but I've said it many times, that the championship course at Royal County Down is really three courses. There are the yellow tees, the forward tees, and that course runs to about 6,600 yards of that order, and it's very playable by most golfers. You know, if you can play golf at all, you'll be able to play that course. There's some significant carries onto the fairway. You're still going to be playing the same. There are actually only about four properly blind holes, and once you've played them, they're not blind anymore. And I should say a little secret for anybody playing it for the first time, those blind holes have the widest fairways. play off that if you're a higher handicapper. And by higher handicapper, I really mean if you're into double figures, that's the course to play, because it will give you the full challenge of Royal County Down. If you then go to the middle tees, which we call the medal tees, that course is over 6,900 yards long. And you need to be a seriously good striker of the ball to carry it far enough off a lot of the tees. It's really challenging. And you would need to be a decent single figure golfer to play that course and get it round in a way that's enjoyable for you. And then you have the blue tees or the championship tees, and that course is over 7,200 yards. But you really need to be a very low single figure player off maybe up to about a 3 or 4 handicap to play that course, and you need to also be a good striker to just get the ball into play off the tees. Yeah. They are really challenging. And they're the tees that if we have championships there, and we do have a lot of championships, most recently I think the Irish Open was there in 2015, and even then the European Tour pushed some of those blue tees forward because they were so challenging. So so that's the big advice: your level of ability. Don't be tempted to go further back just because they're the back tees and so on, because you could end up, you know, losing an awful lot of golf balls.
We talk about it all the time on this podcast. The fastest way to destroy an experience is by sending yourself all the way to the backs if the conditions are against us. When we played it was blowing an absolute hoolie. I mean, it was and that was all well and good for the first three, because it was right off the right shoulder, and you know, life's easy when you've got, you know,
of course,
short iron into the first, a par five, you're thinking I can get quite used to it. But when you turn and face into it, you wouldn't want to be stood on the ninth tee standing on the blues, because I mean you know, there's only a few people in the world in that wind are going to get it on the fairway. So
that's right. Yeah. That would be my advice. And you do that, you will have a great time. Yeah, for sure.
Another thing I think that's worth just highlighting that you said there about the caddies. I mean, we talked about it on our previous podcast when we visited Northern Ireland, but the caddies that we had when we visited Royal County Down were just absolutely brilliant and really did enhance the day. Not only because they can tell you where to hit the ball, or likely to help me find it in the rough. But, you know, just the banter and the chat, and just they're just really good sociable guys. And it turns out they were all, we three players, three caddies, they're all much better golfers than we were. I think they were all roughly around
scratch.
It's
pretty humbling when on the second sort of hole you sort of say, what's what's your lowest knock round here? It's sort of 67. You're thinking, okay, I think I'm in safe hands here today. The only way I could be in safe hands is if I picked up the back and just watched for the afternoon. But we talked about it, didn't we? And the caddy program's great. Like, they actually explained it to us how the program works, and you get a ticket at the end and you put it in the right box, and depending on, you know, obviously it's excellent, but you know, and I seem to recall that I think it was Phil who was on my bag. His command of yardages was exemplary. I couldn't, it was almost robotic. I tested him a few times with the rangefinder, and I think you guys have like the bib structure, don't you? With the yellow bibs basically means they can pretty much get a yardage from anywhere on the course, near enough to about 2 yards. Doesn't matter what day of the week it is. But no, it was fabulous.
Yeah, well, the caddy program is expertly run on a weekly, day-to-day basis and weekly basis by our professional, Kevin Whitson. And Kevin gets them trained up if they're novices, and if they're young kids during their summer holidays, he makes sure that they all get properly trained up. And then there is, as you say, this hierarchy up to the top guys who really... are superb caddies. I mean, they're professionals in their own right. And we've had top players who come to play the course, and the greats have all come to play, including the likes of Tiger Woods. He came back. He was there 3 times because he couldn't quite master it the first couple of times. And these guys talk so highly of the caddies. They're, apart from being very nice guys, polite, courteous and all of that, they know their stuff. But Kevin Whitson must take a lot of credit for that, amongst other things that he contributes to the club. So, we're very lucky to have that kind of program running. Yeah.
Well, we have to take this opportunity to thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast with us. It's not often we get to chat to such important people in golf clubs, and it's our attempt to try and connect the people who want to come play County Down with members, and it's what you're doing is exemplary, and we really do thank you for taking the time to speak to us, and we wish you all the best in continuing to do all the hard work that you do. So thank you very much for speaking with us.
Oh, not at all. It's a pleasure. If you come back to play, please phone me and come and we'll sort something out. We'll get a game together.
Brian,
I won't need asking twice on that one.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's,
thank you. Yeah,
no, thank you, Brian. It is great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Bye. Watch this.